Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Jason Kahn, co-founder and chief scientific officer at Mightier. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, Matt. Thanks.
So, Jason, it's great to have you on. And what I always like to do before getting into the main part of my discussion is to let each guest provide a little bit more of a background in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
All right. Sounds good. So, as you said, my name is Jason Kahn. I'm the chief scientific officer at a company called Mightier. Mightier builds biofeedback games to build emotional regulation in kids. And by background, I'm a developmental psychologist. Really got my academic start at Boston Children's Hospital and Harvard Medical School, working in the Department of Psychiatry, and have always been fascinated by how kids grow and learn. You know, for me, it was especially getting the opportunity to work in children's, this really growing understanding that we didn't have great ways to help kids, especially built these really fundamental lifelong skills like emotional regulation. And so that really opened up a puzzle for me. And now we're over 10 years later since that puzzle has been opened up, but have been lucky enough to get to work with a great team over at Mightier, where we dedicate ourselves every day to figuring out how we can help kids and their families really build this really important skill and get through some pretty tough challenges in their emotional growth.
So kind of as you were saying, your focus is on working with kids. So what are some of the challenges in working with kids, and how does that differ from the expectations that might be in place when working with adults?
Yeah, I think one of the most rewarding parts of working with kids is that they think and they see the world in such starkly different terms than adults do. And I think, you know, anyone who has had a conversation with a kid kind of intuitively knows this. So you have this conversation with a young child, and you know, you sort of leave your head scratching because what they're describing makes perfect sense to them, but doesn't necessarily like make sense from the view of an adult. And that what that leads to is like these crazy challenges of how we, especially as we get into how we care for kids, how we take advantage of the fact that they are growing and developing in different ways, and turn that into really these really enriching experiences for them.
So, and you were saying, you know, to create those enriching experiences, it sounds like you really need to pivot from, you know, removing the expectation that you can apply, you know, adult logic, if you want to call it that, to the children, and you know, really try to remember what it was like when you were a child.
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially when you get into mental health, like a lot of these tools are built for adults, and a lot of these adult tools are built with the assumption that you can just talk about your emotions. And I think for a kid, like, you know, that idea that you can just talk through and think through your emotions, it's a lot like the idea that you can talk someone through how to ride a bike, right? So, you know, you could talk and lecture, like, could you imagine like lecturing like a 5-year-old on how to ride a bike? Like, it would just be like this comedy, right? Like, you know, it's what you're going to do or how you go. Like, it's this really like experiential learning. You just sort of have to throw out this idea that words are going to get you to your endpoint. And that's a lot different than how you can work with a grown-up.
So kind of based on your experience, what are some of the effective strategies you've seen or been able to develop that help you work in a more productive fashion with kids?
I think for anyone who wants to work with kids, I mean, I think that the first thing you have to understand is that they're experiencing the world, and they're experiencing like their bodies a lot of times, like for the first time, right? So their brains are growing, and that means how they sense and their changes and like what is happening. Honestly, it could be like the very first time they've experienced in that way, as their brains and bodies grow. What works really, really well is when you take on like an experiential and really play first approach with kids. So this idea that they are going to be the ones who are going to be figuring it out for themselves, and they're going to give them an experience, and they're not going to do it. You know, the experience is not something that is very closed-ended, but it's something that allows them to play and push and feel. So going back to that idea about a bike, like the idea that you've got to get on that bike and you've got to feel what balance is like. You've got to sway, you've got to go back and forth, you've got to get yourself going forward. And it's not a matter of describing what it means to push those pedals and build a balance. It's more of a matter of doing that and feeling that within your body and within your mind and making it happen and being able to do that over and over and over again. We think a lot about muscle memory, but that idea of how do you build something that you know for yourself and is yours?
Right. And the comparison of muscle memory is interesting because, you know, I feel like that may not be a way most people necessarily think about it of, you know, trying to build, it sounds like almost building emotional and mental health repetition and memory from that perspective. So kind of how do you see that developing?
It's funny. I mean, it actually, the physical analogy works really well. It happens through repetition, right? So the more you can do it, and, you know, I can talk a little bit about Mightier here too. So, you know, what we do is we have kids playing these emotional biofeedback games. And the idea in our games is that we want them to have that sensation. So to build that skill of emotional regulation, you just have to do emotional regulation. Like there's no other way to do it. And so, and the more you can do it and the more you can see yourself doing it and the more you can see yourself being powerful, like, you know, it really is. It's that repetition. And it's the same way that, you know, I mean, the physical analogy works. So like if you were, you know, we've talked about riding a bike, but even if you wanted to do that, like if you want to build up your muscles, like the more you do something, you're going to have that sensation and you're going to be able to pull that out and you're going to be able to pull it out into like the context that matter for you.
Right. And so you just mentioned biofeedback in what you were discussing and how you know, through your work, it sounds like you're trying to develop that through games for, I think you said emotional regulation. Yeah. So I guess before we get into, you know, the biofeedback and the gaming aspect, you know, can you help provide maybe a little bit more of a grounding in terms of what you mean by emotional regulation?
Yeah. So thank you. Emotional regulation is such an important skill for everyone. So I don't think any of us go through a day where we feel like we handle every single one of our like interpersonal social situations perfectly, right? So emotional regulation is really that ability to stay calm and focused and navigate through like these challenges that come your way. And for kids, there are especially a certain set of kids where they're really still building that skill, and it takes longer to develop for them. And typically, I mean, you see this associated with mental health disorders like ADHD or anxiety or even autism. And for these kids, like, so what happens is they get, you know, they have low frustration tolerance, they're impulsive, they, you know, they act out, you sometimes see disruptive behaviors or even withdrawing behaviors is another form of emotional regulation. But they really don't have that. They don't have that toolkit so that when things get hard, they can sort of persevere and be resilient through these demanding situations. And so for us, the question is, how do we get kids into a place where we know they can have this lifelong skill and they can succeed? And really, to just frame it for the people listening, the idea of emotional regulation is so powerful that when we see this construct and when we look at it across kids, what we see is that kids who succeed in it early, later in life, they're healthier. So they have better health outcomes. They make more money. So they're wealthier. There's a financial outcome to this. And there's also a social outcome. So they have better long-term relationships, be that with spouses or whoever. So, you know, any domain that we want our, as parents, is that we want our kids to succeed in, there's this one fundamental skill that we really need to build up in these kids and really just make it part of our day-to-day focus about, as we think about the same way we think about helping our kids read, we really do need to think about how we help them build this emotional regulation skill.
So when you're talking about building that skill, it sounds like, hopefully this is an accurate statement, that it's not that it's trying to necessarily suppress or avoid an emotion so much as, you know, allow yourself to feel it, but not have it overwhelm and kind of take over a response.
Yeah. In fact, that model, like even if you go all the way to the neuroscience, like that's the right way to think about it, right? So we don't want kids to not feel emotions. Like that usually is not healthy. So, but we want them to acknowledge their emotions, and we don't want the, like emotions, especially like these really big emotions, they can take over kids' bodies, and they take over kids' bodies for reasons of biology, right? Their brain is not built yet enough to sort of tamper down the emotion and regulate it. So they have to build that skill up. And so that's exactly right. You don't want that emotion to overwhelm the child. And you want them to really build that sense that as the emotion builds, they can pro- whether they can sort of step around that emotion and sort of just navigate through the situation or feel confident enough in whatever strategies or skills they have, things like deep breathing, that they can get through that situation and they don't have to use one of the, you know, less social, less socially productive strategies. So usually that's yelling or screaming or hitting, or, you know, you think about these, you think about the type of outbursts kids have. You don't want a kid to get there because that's the point where the emotion has taken over the whole body. And we want to avoid that.
So in terms of, you know, helping to avoid it and to, you know, it sounds like help identify strategies for, you know, recognizing as that kind of crest is building and being able to hopefully allow it to break more softly, you know, kind of what are the approaches for that?
So traditionally there aren't great approaches. And so that has sort of led to our profession, my professional track, but, you know, historically what we've done is we found the kids who are at the most risk and we've used one of two strategies. So we've used the medication strategy historically, and I don't want to be overly negative on medications because I know that a lot of families do benefit quite a bit from medications, but especially when you get into medications related to mood, there are still pretty serious side effects for that. And usually doctors are only using that for the most severe of cases. And traditionally the other approach was therapy, and therapy is really hard. I mean, therapy is hard because we don't have a lot of people to provide that service. So kids and families end up on these really long wait lists. And therapy is hard because it's built in a way that is really, it's building off a tradition for adults. So even when we get kids in, we really don't often see them get the dose of therapy that we would like, just because it's hard. Like the kid doesn't always engage with the therapy. And then that leads to parents who are wondering, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they building their life around this? And so you end up seeing, you know, you end up seeing the child discontinue with the therapy too soon. And so that is, like, traditionally we don't have great tools for emotional regulation.
Yeah, and it sounds like in your description there, it kind of went back to what we were talking about at the beginning, which is, you know, as you're saying, a lot of the traditional tools were built from an adult focus and not recognizing that there really truly are differences when you're working with children. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Jason Kahn from Mightier, and we've been talking about working with children and getting into emotional regulation. And Jason, I'd kind of like to pivot now and start to pick up on some another aspect of what you were mentioning earlier, which is the biofeedback, which I think you were describing is a method that you've been focused on with your research and other professional work as hopefully a more effective and efficient way for working with children. So is that accurate?
It is. So what biofeedback is it's a way to see your body. It's a way to see your body in a new way. And so, you know, you think about this in your day-to-day life, you usually get to see your body going, but you don't have a window into your emotions. You don't have a window into how your emotions change the world around you. And so what biofeedback really does, especially in the case of kids, is it gives them really for the first time a window into how their body is changing really as their emotions change. So kids are not going to have great words for emotions. They're not going to really know how to label them. But when they can see them and when they can make them visible, then they can act and they can take steps and they can really build, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about muscle memory, but to bring that back, like, they can build that muscle memory because they can see themselves doing it in a way they hadn't been before. And so really our work is focused on that first interaction, that, like, giving that kid their, for the first time ever, this ability to see their emotions in the same way they get to see their own body move around.
And so when you say being able to see their emotions, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, so it's a little easier if we bring it in the context of Mightier, but the idea is, so for us, we have kids wear a heart rate monitor. And so one of the things that happens is as your body starts to feel large emotions, whether it's anger or anxiety or frustration, a whole bunch of things happen in your body. But one of the really important ones is your heart starts beating faster. That's normal. That's natural. It's even evolutionary, right? So if a tiger is chasing you, you want to be able to run away and you want your body to be able to run away. But for kids, like, you know, it's almost like that old evolutionary fight or flight reflex has been hijacked for more normal situations. So we watch it happen in real time, and we watch it feed out because kids are wearing some sort of monitor for us, it's a really small heart rate monitor that you wear on your arm. You watch it happen. And then what we do is you can see that happening. And then what Mightier does is it takes a twist on this, is it actually makes your life, it makes your life harder. So you're playing games while you're playing Mightier. And it makes the games harder. The games all of a sudden get more difficult as your heart rate goes up. And so a child sees this. The window shows up. There are these creatures called lavelings, which come in. The lavelings are the personification of their hot emotions. And they see that, and they know the game has gotten harder. They have to do something. And they are, with that visualization, they're then able to say, okay, I can take a break. And in fact, Mightier is going to help them. It's going to give them cues and prompts. And if they decide to opt in, they can then go through a deep breathing exercise or a progressive muscle relaxation exercise, really whatever makes sense to the child.
So it sounds like by presenting the opportunities, it's, you know, I think as you're kind of referencing, helping to build the self-recognition and then the kind of channeling over into a means of identifying a self-regulating strategy.
I like that way of putting it a lot. Like the idea that, yeah, like you see something happen, you get instantaneous, just like that, you get feedback. And so then you can recognize it. And then channeling that, because it's one thing to recognize, but it's another thing to know what to do as it's happening. And then you see it build out, right? So you recognize it and you see it. And then eventually you're not in front of the screen when it's happening, but you still have that same feeling, that same biological sense of what's happening. And then you pull out the same toolbox.
And, you know, I'm kind of intrigued by, you know, your description of, it sounds like using games to help feed that. So how long did it take you to come to recognize or to find that a game was an effective means of delivering really this lesson?
It's funny, right? So we had this experience back when we were in the hospital of just talking to kids, right? And trying to figure out where they are and what they're doing. And I think really within 10 conversations with kids, we figured out that all of them were in front of games. And so that became our call to arms of like, because we want to meet kids where they are. I think that a really good way to have an ineffective intervention is to take your view of what the world should be and throw it at someone. And so being able to take that learning of of where kids were, we had to put our intervention on top of where kids were. The trick for us is how to be fun. And what we do for that is we learned this lesson over time too, is we actually work with developers who have built games already that are successful. So that kids who are using Mightier in particular, it's not like they're going to play one game and then just be done with it, because we've all watched our kids play games. We know they get bored fast, but they have access to over 25 games and we keep growing that library so that we know that we can just give them lots and lots of experiences.
Yeah, and I think you made a really good point of, you know, it sounds like it became apparent pretty quickly once you actually started asking the questions. And, you know, as you said, we're coming to the kids where they are. And, you know, and you said it was pretty quick for an identification of everyone was using games. And while I think saying that now would probably sound somewhat mm-hmm. obvious, because it's, you know, if you just think about your interaction with your own kids, they probably always want to play games. Mm-hmm. But when you're thinking from, you know, a professional perspective, sometimes almost it can feel like the training gets in the way of finding what could end up being a common sense approach.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, especially with kids, like the message is important, right? Like we can't lose sight of what we're trying to teach these kids, but there has to be, it's almost just as much work as building the original intervention or tool is to figure out like, how are we going to package this up in a way that meets a child where they are? And I just don't think you can do that without just talking with kids. Like it's just that, it sounds really simple in retrospect, but again, it gets back to these kids who are, you know, only sometimes or only going to half tell you what they're thinking. But once you have that loop, then yes, like you start to figure out like, yeah, this is where kids are. And this is what we need to do in order to be successful in reaching them.
So, and I guess when you're talking about using games as the means to reaching them, is it all electronic based games, or is there any opportunity for you know, I'll call it the old school board game approach. You know, so to, you know, doing something that maybe might not be on a device.
I think from a design point of view, I think everything is open, right? So I think that you can take on some of the board to game approach. For us, we found video games to be extremely powerful and just this really nice confluence of technology right now. So you have wearables at a point where they're really easy to get a hold of and they're really accessible and they're really small. You have this place where tablets are now part of the home environment, and you have this huge influx of games. And so what we're able to do, I think uniquely, is then take that and then take all of our learning that we've built up about emotional regulation and throw all of these pieces together and provide an emotional learning layer on top of that. And I think that's what gives us, in particular, our power.
Yeah, no, and I agree. It's, you know, kind of, as you're saying, all the different forms of electronics it seems like very much all over the place and very pervasive. And I guess kind of one aspect of that I'm curious about is, you know, I know this is a struggle that we have, that my wife and I have with our own children, is, you know, how much screen time do you allow? Mm-hmm. And it seems, and sometimes it can almost seem like the screen time is a trigger for a lack of emotional regulation, because it's when you try and end that period of time, you can sometimes get an oversized response. It seems like this could almost be a mutual benefit, because if you're teaching those skills, it sounds like it could also help with the screen time question.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a really good point. I think it's excellent to wonder and think about this. And I don't know a parent right now isn't, ourselves included, right, who is not, my wife and I talk a lot about how are we thinking about screen time and how are we really gonna help our kids like be successful with screens. And I think one of the things that we've come to understand is that not all screens are created equal. So, you know, we try to give our kids, you know, this idea of like a balanced diet, right? So there's times they're using screens straight out for passive entertainment, and just, that's fine. Like, that's part of their day. And like, it's cool. Like, you know, build cultural competence. But there's also time they're talking to family. And then there's also time they're doing math. And there's also time they're doing reading. And then there's also time where we can build emotional regulation skill and, you know, try to be really intelligent about and make a priori decisions about how we want to fill up the buckets in advance. And so that's one of the things we've picked up on. And then, yes, with Mightier in particular, like that is one of the places where we want, you know, we almost see, like you point out, like this ability for a virtuous cycle. So really building these skills of being able to transition gracefully off of whatever it is, and handle that wellspring of emotion that comes up during those times of transition.
So, you know, I think trying to wrap it all together with these different types of interventions and hopefully the developing of the skill, kind of what does it look like when you start to see a child building their own ability to self-regulate?
It's pretty cool, right? So for most kids, there's almost this immediate effect of, I've never known that these skills that I've heard about at school or at a therapist's office like actually work. And that's almost day one, right? So I can deep breathe and I can watch my heart rate go down. There's this day one impact on a kid. It's like, oh my goodness, I didn't know that existed. And so that really is the starting point. And then what we hope to see and what we measure, because, you know, despite, you know, we still do hold on to our scientific roots, is this functional impact on a kid's day-to-day life. So for us, ground truth is the amount of stress that is in a parent's life, and how much stress and impact is that parent or family feeling because of whatever difficulty a child has. And what we see are these phenomenal reductions in not just child stress, but parent stress that come as a child moves through the program over various weeks. And that's not a switch. That doesn't happen instantaneously, but you do see this. And then you also see parents, I think we're in the high 70s of parents reporting improvement in their child's day-to-day life. So how severe are the symptoms and how much has the child improved? In addition to seeing, like, you know, as we talk to parents about specific symptoms on surveys, we see persistent reduction across the board on all types of symptoms that a child sees. And, you know, it happens over a period of time. And then the child does, what's cool is the child then maintains these symptoms, these strengths too, both with playing Mightier. We have a little bit of academic research that says even then they pull it. they pull these skills out of Mightier and they push it into their lives, and even after they stop playing.
No, and I think that is a great point of reminding that it's, you know, a process that takes time, and it's not going to be an immediate change. And, you know, I think that's actually a great point to unfortunately have to wrap up on, because believe it or not, we are already out of time. So I want to thank my guest, Jason Kahn, for a great conversation today.
Well, thank you for having me, Matt. This was wonderful.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a pleasure to have you on and to dive into this topic, which is definitely an angle that we haven't covered on the show before. And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at #HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.